Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is with me as always, and by God, we got Eric back. Eric, you're not even on the phone. You're not even on the road this time.
I know. I'm using a real computer and everything.
We're all very excited to hear it. This week, we are going to get into the actual tournament bracket.
The tournament, yes. The field is set. First things first, I should announce that for our just embarrassing region, which we said we were going to put up to the final seed to a fan vote, whether folks wanted the Terrell Owens game or the 2010 Bears versus Giants game in which Jay got sacked 9 times in one half, thanks to a suggestion by my good friend at Butkus Stats, Quentin Krishko. The fan vote was overwhelmingly in favor of the Jay Cutler 9-sack game. And I will respect democracy here. I would like to say I do think that's a demographic result, because I think if you really remember that 49ers game, you remember what it meant for Cade McNown, you remember how embarrassing it was that the Bears' offense literally never even crossed midfield. I mean, that one is a very strong contender. At the very least, that vote should have been closer than it was. So I think recency bias somewhat is, even for a game that happened 14 years ago, recency bias is still there with the Jay Cutler game. I will respect democracy, and it is in the tournament, but I just wanted to say that for me, I don't know that I would have voted that over the Terrell Owens game, but it was a game that absolutely needed to be discussed, the Jay Cutler game, so I am glad that it made its way into the tournament anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I do remember the Cade McNown game, the Terrell Owens record, and I think I still might have chosen the 9-sack game in one half for Jay, just because of the visceral reaction I had on the pod when you brought it up. I was like,
it was pretty bad. With a gun. I mean, and I'll always remember that game fondly because Rick Tllender blames Jay Cutler's diabetes for his struggles.
That was an extreme.
Getting rid of the football at night games was one of the funniest things that, like, the Chicago sports media has ever done. So it gets credit for that. So yeah, I think we're starting on that half of the bracket, right? We're going to try to get through the heartbreaking region and the just embarrassing region today. Is that the plan?
That's the plan, yeah.
All right, fellas, do you want to break hearts first or do you want to be embarrassed first?
Let's rock, paper, scissors. Let's do heartbreaking first since it's in the upper right corner.
That's fine with me. Okay. I guess, Travis, you're a tournament guy. Is it more accurate of a tournament to start with 2 versus 3 and then do 1 versus 4?
You know, or I think in this case, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Let's just go down. Yeah, let's go top to bottom.
Okay, so our first matchup in the tournament, the 1 seed in the heartbreaking region, which is the double doink game, obviously the 2019-2018 regular season playoff game between the Bears and Eagles, ending with So that is the 1 seed, strong contender, major nominee, huge fan vote. I mean, especially for Bears fans that are of that next generation after us. Because, you know, I think for Bears fans our age, we're mid-30s. The Lovey Bears were kind of your formative Bears. Like, the 2001 Bears might have kicked off your Bears consciousness. But the Lovey Bears are kind of the first Bears team that you really staked your hopes to that broke your hearts. So I think the double doink game is maybe not as painful to us, even though it is painful. Don't get me wrong here. But for every Bears fan under 30, that is like the signature trauma of their lives at this point. So I think that makes sense for why it's a 1 seed strong contender. And it's facing off against the 4 seed, which is one that this is a game that we had originally forgotten about until somewhat late in the bracket making process, but Travis remembered it, made a good argument for it. And this is week 17, Bears versus Texans during the 2008 season, when the Bears had like 7 different things that had to go right for them to make the playoffs. 6 of them went right. The one that did not was the Bears taking care of business against a Texans team that wasn't even that good. So in a season that had been nothing but close losses, heartbreaking losses, this was the final one when it was right there for them. All they had to do was win and they were in, and they did not win. It wasn't even really, I think it was a 31-24 was the final, but I don't even think it was really as close as that in reality is how it felt. So that's our first matchup. I don't know that we need to spend a whole lot of time on this. I'm glad we remembered the Week 17 game. I'm glad that we gave it its due both in the nomination process and today. But would either of you advance that over the double doink?
I wouldn't. I think they have they present the same issue, you know, kind of like it's both. It was right there. You just had to do one little thing to go to the playoffs, even like it was a postseason advancement hinged on one thing they couldn't get done. And 2008, like you said, lots of close losses. They couldn't quite take care of business. It wasn't like they were a great team that was robbed of the playoffs. Double doink, like they were a 12-4 team. I don't think they would have gone any further anyway, but like they were an acceptable football team.
A historically good defense. Like I think yeah. a top 10 defense.
Yeah, I mean that was a good football team in some capacity, and ultimately they failed to make a single, not even that hard field goal. These are heartbreaking for the same reason. And I think the double doink just is more heartbreaking in that same axis. But what do you think, Travis?
I think there are a couple things going on here. First of all, I want to point out all seeds were made by Kyle on his own. So I think they're more indicative of how Kyle feels about these games necessarily than the rest of us.
I did try to counteract my own bias on a couple of these. This is not tipping you off as to which one I would necessarily vote for on all these. I tried to actually factor in all of the feedback we've gotten throughout this from everyone. Like for me, I mean, in this region, double doink's maybe still a one seed, but for me, double doink is not necessarily, even compared to some of the other one seeds, not that strong of a contender necessarily. But I definitely took into account the fact that for every single Bears fan that I know under 30, especially, this is like their signature trauma.
I also, real quick, want to commend you, Kyle, for the absolutely atrocious formatting of this thing. What did you use to make
it? Yeah, it is horrible.
It's just a website called Bracket Maker. I typed in things and it made me a bracket.
You know, congratulations to Bracket Maker on the minimum viable product.
Yeah, why are the fonts all different sizes? Why are the numbers going over the letters in some places? Shame on you, Bracket Maker.
Do you think that this tournament deserves like pristine format?
That's a good
point. No, I mean it's very fitting. Yeah.
This tournament should look like an abortion. Like it should be. Like it should be the worst thing you've ever seen. So
the second thing I wanted to mention is that now we are in the tournament. We're not just trying to nominate people for regions. I am not just looking at, you know, which game was more heartbreaking or something like that. I'm factoring the whole thing in here.
Just back your horse.
And these are still like extremely similar games, right? Both of them were actually good games to watch, like pretty exciting. I would say the worst game was probably Bears Texans, only because the Texans were actually further ahead than it seems by the final score. The Bears got a touchdown late in the game, but they didn't really have a chance to ever win the game.
That's a very Bears thing to do, you know. Oh yeah, this looks close by the score, but actually.
That's kind of my point here. The double doink is actually unique. And there's something that Kyle had mentioned about how he ranks these Bears games. He wants to find the most Bears loss to an extent. And the double doink was traumatic, but usually the Bears don't have these like weird, outstanding moments. Usually what you get with the Bears are these teams that are good, but unthreatening. And then they just kind of disappear like a fart in the wind. And then you forget that whatever had happened to them had happened. And this 2008 Bears team is so perfect for a Bears team. It was a team that could have beaten anybody on the schedule. They lost like three games that they absolutely should have won for mysterious reasons that didn't make any sense. They then beat the Aaron Rodgers-led Packers completely clean. Nothing wrong with Green Bay on that day. They did that the week before this game. They cleared that Packers hurdle. And then they faltered the last game
of that season was against the Vikings. They remember when they had nothing to play for and they still eliminated the Vikings anyways.
There was the last game of what season?
2018.
Oh, no, we're talking about 2008, man.
Oh, I know.
We're not talking about 2018. We are talking about 2008.
They said beat Rodgers clean, and I was like, yeah, that hasn't happened very much. And then I was thinking of the last time it kind of happened was 2018. But yeah, no, you're right. They did actually beat the Aaron Rodgers Packers at Soldier Field.
We got over that proverbial hump, and then we just shit ourselves. And the season was over, and nobody will ever remember it.
When they beat an Eagles team, right, then made the NFC Championship game. So, like, they had two legit wins to get themselves in this position. Because the very Bears thing to do, like you said, would have been to just lose that Packers game. Like, that would have been, like, oh, if we just beat Green Bay, and this isn't even a good Green Bay team, if we just beat them, like, we keep our hopes alive. And they did it. They kept their hopes alive just to, like, crush them against the Texans, which are basically an unfranchise. So, like, yeah.
Yeah,
I think you've convinced me.
I thought I was going to give up. I was going to give you the one last shot because I think Bears-Texans should win.
You think Bears-Texans should beat the double doink?
I think I'm leaning that way now because, like you said, the double doink is it's one bad thing that happened.
It is a single bad moment.
The end of what was otherwise a good game, a good season. If we're factoring how much it is like the Bears to do something.
Okay.
The double doink is absolutely the kind of failure that any fan of any organization can relate to.
Okay, but Travis, so you're de-emphasizing the heartbreaking aspect in the heartbreaking region.
I think they're equally heartbreaking.
I don't know. Because I had actual hopes for 2018, because that defense was... Now, granted, the 2008 team was like bad on both sides of the ball. Really, they just kept playing on borrowed time every week. The 2018 was an elite defense, and I mean, they were not a good offense, but by the standards of previous Bears teams that had been defense, they had like the 19th ranked offense. Mitch was doing some good things. And that was a fairly weak NFC. The only major contender was the Rams, whom they had already beaten. I cannot, in good conscience, advance the 2008 team ahead of the 2008 loss ahead of the double doink. I can't do it. I, at least in terms of heartbreaking for me, I had hope for the 2018 Bears. I did not have hope for the 2008 Bears. Not real hope. I wanted them to make the playoffs because you always want your team to make the playoffs. But like the 2018 Bears, that was where I did the most Bears thing, which was I was like, well, I mean, the NFC's kind of weak, and then all, you know, elite defense, and you just get one good game out of them, and blah, blah, blah. And I can't do it. I will. If you both advance 2008 versus the Texans, I can't stop you. Obviously, I'm outvoted, but I will put it into the record right now that I vehemently oppose this decision.
Yeah, I just think I didn't have those expectations for that Bears team. They did have an elite defense, absolutely. But, I mean, Mitch was always going to hold them back. The offense was fine. I mean, you are right, they beat the Rams. Do you remember that Rams game? That Rams game could have been on this list. That Rams game could have been in Unwatchable.
But I felt like they could have done that again in those playoffs because Jared Goff is a Ram anyways, never really recovered from what Vic Fangio had done to him there.
Living the dream there. And that was the year that the Rams played the Patriots in the worst Super Bowl of all time.
Right. And that Patriots team was a team that the Bears had played fairly close. They'd only lost, you know, by three. Or maybe it wasn't by six. Anyways. And almost either tied it or won on that Kevin White Hail Mary. So, I mean, in hindsight, it was a fool's hope. But I still had it. So, for me, I can't advance 2018 over the double doink. I can't do it.
I don't know. Kyle feels very strongly here. I don't know if I feel that strongly. And the other thing is I do think whatever game advances here is going down immediately.
I think there's potential there.
But I either way, like I said, I think if I advance Bears Texans here, if I hold to my guns, it's definitely going to lose out of vengeance. But I also think if the double doink goes on, it's just not as strong as what I think is going to advance from the next game. I don't know if it matters.
This is a decision that I don't think matters yet. Neither of these games is the worst Bears game of our lives.
Yes. Yeah.
I can tell you that right now. Neither.
All right. You know what? I'm going to stick to Bears Texans because I don't think it matters in the end. And that's honestly what I believe. I'll hold to my initial position.
Kyle has convinced me. The double doink is on all axes other than is it what the Bears would do. It's worse.
Yes. All right, throw it in. The double doink advances and will double summarily be executed.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it matters not. But
okay, hold on. Let me keep it. I have a note there. I can keep track of this. I should have just made the bracket to where I could just enter it live, but that would have required, like, technical acumen I do not have.
You could have asked one of us to do that. We're looking at the
formatting. We're looking at it right now, and I don't think this thing could have held up to it. So, all right, so the next game, while Kyle is typing that out and making furious notes, we've got the 2 seed, Justin Fields getting absolutely annihilated by the Browns in 2021, and the 3 seed, the Marion Barber game of 2011. So again, we kind of have a generational battle here. I do like that you set this up like decades apart, because it really is going to have like fans of one game versus unfans of one game versus unfans of another game. I guess I should just tip my hand here. I think Marion Barber moves ahead in a landslide.
Oh, do
bearing, you? Bearing the weight of the 2011 Bears.
Oh, Kyle is excited.
Wonderful. Yes.
I don't think the Justin Fields thing comes even close.
You don't, do you? Okay. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
May I have the floor?
You go ahead.
Okay. Gentlemen, if I may, we have said, as Travis himself so beautifully pointed out just a little bit ago, and I commend my esteemed colleague for that, what is the essence of this tournament? It is to determine the most Bears loss, the worst Bears game. And what is the essential flavor of a Bears loss? Is it not bad offense? Is that not a key ingredient? Is that not the key ingredient, I ask you? It is. You need not answer. And why are our offenses always so bad? Why are they so bad, gentlemen, I ask you? And once more, I don't care what your answer is. The answer is the quarterback. And so here we have found ourselves time and again, each generation, each year, each administration, we have pinned our hopes, our dreams, our aspirations, our wishes upon this next great hope at quarterback. And thus enters the 2021 Bears, in many ways, the most Bears team of them all, because they symbolize so much that is wrong with how this franchise has approached everything throughout history. We all know Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace should have been fired after the 2020 season. We all knew that once they kept them, it was an appalling idea to let them draft a quarterback, knowing that they were on this win or fired mandate. We knew that it was setting this poor child up for torment. We knew that it was setting him up for failure. We knew how this movie would play out, because we have seen it time and again, where the coach doesn't get to pick the quarterback. The GM doesn't get to pick the coach. Always these forced, arranged marriages between people who aren't good enough to begin with and aren't operating in ideal conditions. And so you entered the 2021 season, and you had Matt Nagy refusing to let Justin Fields learn the job, take the reps in camp, et cetera, et cetera. He couldn't articulate what the actual plan was for this kid, what the benchmarks for this kid were to meet. You knew all of this. You felt all of this, a sickening seed of doubt festering in your chest and in your soul. You knew from the beginning that the Justin Fields era was starting off poorly. You knew that they were doing what they always do. You knew that they were handling it all ass backwards, but you didn't let it in. You didn't let it get you, because inside you exists this tiny, beautiful light of hope, this thing that keeps you following this team year after year through disappointment and embarrassment and heartbreak. And you told yourself when Andy Dalton went down and Justin Fields was going to get his first start, you were like, this is all that matters. This is where my hope lies. And they have a kind of player that they've never had before at the quarterback position. You could run heavy play action, deep bootleg, attack downfield. This kid's got an outstanding deep ball. You could run QB run, mix in some QB power you could do all of these things with his legs. He's a dual threat, the likes of which we have never seen. We could do all of this. The world is open to us. And within, what, 15 goddamn minutes of game action, 15 minutes of live action, you watch this kid take 4-5 sacks. You saw Matt Nagy call a bunch of RPO bullshit that requires the quarterback to make a decision and get the ball out in 0.5 seconds with a quarterback whose major knock coming out of college was he's a slow decision maker. You're going to have to do max protect. You're going to have to, but if you do those things, he can throw deep and you can also work in the QB to make no effort to modify a playbook from Andy Dalton to Justin Fields. And you watched in live time as your dream, this hope that you already knew was a fool's hope, but God, one of these times, aren't we owed a break? One of these times, won't it just work in spite of itself? You watched them destroy it all right there in his first ever start. Laid it open. Ripped open your heart. And then from that point on, the Justin Fields era never really recovers. You never really recover from the depth that game sank you to. You just kind of watched when he had his highlights. You were like, oh, maybe he's turning it around. Maybe this is where the turnaround starts. Because they needed a turnaround from the jump. Because from the very beginning, they buried the kid 6 feet under. Just like they always do. And you watched him do it. And you watched him try to dig himself out and ultimately just give up and say, fine, fucking bury me. And that is why this game should advance. Fuck you.
Eric, do you...
That was a very impressive tirade. I mean, I feel like it bears the weight of Kyle having spent God knows how many hours writing and thinking about yes. Justin Fields specifically. Yes. I mean, this is I don't think anyone needs to hear that Kyle has obviously very strong feelings about this one.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is coming from the position of a man who has spent so much of his time and life investing in Justin Fields over the last 2 to 3 to 4 years and seeing it all come crashing down. But I do think it's a bit revisionist to say, like, that was it for the Justin Fields era.
I just want to go on record and say that Kyle said that was it for the Justin Fields era about every game in the original list that Justin Fields appeared in.
Very true. Very true. And this is one of my arguments against this game. We have a game from this season, which I actually think is a worse stomp and is actually more soul-crushing, because you could write this off as a bad first start. And like you mentioned, Kyle, Justin didn't get the reps. Nagy was being obstinate about that. So there were excuses, right? We didn't know that this sack thing was going to be on Justin. We were like, wow, the offensive line is garbage. Like, they're just sending him out there to die. I hope he doesn't get a concussion or something like that. Which is not to downplay how bad this game is. This is a
bad, to be fair, I'm not trying to accurately represent game. How I felt about it at the time. Because at the time, yes, I still held on to that shred of hope. I'm just telling you, with the benefit of hindsight, what it was and how those nagging feelings that you pushed down that entire summer when you were like, it sure seems like Matt Nagy's fucking this up from Jump Street. I kept trying to push those down. I remember when
I didn't keep trying to push those feelings down. I was like, yeah, he's going to fuck this up. It's like, yeah, I believe I tweeted at the beginning of that season and the season before it that Justin Fields was probably the best quarterback we'd ever had. And we would never know it because he plays for the fucking Chicago Bears.
Yeah, no, credit to Eric. Eric never even allowed himself to sort of get excited about Justin Fields all that much.
I was excited. I just didn't believe that excitement was going to amount to anything.
Travis and I, at least especially that summer, we were like, he can't possibly mean this Andy Dalton shit. This is a motivational tactic. Surely they're going to start giving this kid a chance to win the job. Surely at some point, common sense is going to prevail here. And you just kept like, and they just kept opting for the path of greatest stupidity, and you were like, surely this can't be the plan on the offensive line around this kid. Surely, and then it all came to head in that Browns game, and you were just like, wow, this really was the plan. This is it. This is all they've got for the kid. Yeah. And at that point, it immediately pivoted to, well, they've got to fire Matt Nagy to salvage anything out of him. And that's just like, from his first career start, you're like, you've got to fire the head coach if you want to salvage any of this. And that's when you know, when you consider the odds of what that has meant historically for a young quarterback, just from that literal idea there, you already knew how far the kid was going to have to go just to beat the odds at this point. And he couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, all that being said, I am absolutely not convinced off of the Marion Barber game or the 2011 Bears. I mean, I think the first issue is that Bears team was bad. It was going to be bad. Like you said, we had a lame duck coach. So it was not as heartbreaking to me as 2011. And I do feel like this game against Denver, it has the unfortunate quarterback situation. We've got Caleb Haney in there because Jay Cutler got injured on a meaningless play at the very end of a win that put the Bears at 7-3, that had everybody riding pretty goddamn high about this Bears team. The Bears then proceeded to lose a heartbreaker to the Raiders, a heartbreaker to the Chiefs, and then they came into this game against Tim Tebow. They got beat by him in overtime because Barry and Barber made two truly horrendous plays. I just feel like it has everything. Like it has the season. The whole season was collapsing down around the Bears at this point. This one really put the nail in the coffin, dropping the Bears to 7-6. It was like, oh, it just doesn't matter. Like, we couldn't weather the storm while Jay was out. We're already out of this thing. We have a game with the Packers coming up on fucking Christmas, the second to last game of the season. And then, you know, who cares what's going to happen in the last game? It was such a complete defeat, I think, in this game. Like, everything about the Bears just fell in on itself when they lost in overtime here. And it really felt like, oh, does this whole team just have to go back to the drawing board? Like, now what do we do? Like, we were so high in this season, right? We hadn't had the chance to be super high about Justin Fields yet. We were high on his potential. We were not high on the potential of the team. And the 2011 Bears were an extremely good team. That team had a shot at the Super Bowl. That team had a shot at the playoffs. We saw that from the year before, which we're going to end up talking about a lot as this bracket goes on. Right as soon as I told Kyle that Caleb Haney will be okay, it was not. It destroyed the whole season, and it felt like an entire potential era of Chicago Bears football just kind of just collapsed at this point.
Travis just tried to downplay the exact exchange a little bit. This exchange is seared into my mind.
We were the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Because it struck me. No, this was before Buffalo Wild. It struck me at the time as just like, every now and then, Travis I tend to be much more, I'm always the one that's like, I don't know, man. I can see how this could work, but here's 75 ways that it could fail. And Travis calls that hedging, which is fair, but it's mostly just that I'm afraid to ever be confident in this team. But I don't want to be fatalist. Anyways, Travis, I call him. Maybe I message him. I think it was actually a message. I was like, oh, holy shit. They just said Jay's thumb is broken. He's going to be out for a couple weeks. And Travis said, oh, no. Who gives a shit? We have Caleb Haney. Yep. Those were his actual words. We have Caleb Haney.
That's right.
The only person ever to say that.
Ever to say that. That would be like, yeah. Anyways.
I mean, the deal is, that, and then we were looking at this stretch of games. We were looking at easy games, and it just felt like, well, we don't need Jay, and we really shouldn't have. Like, the defense didn't lose many points in these games, but they couldn't win.
They lost three straight games in which they allowed only one touchdown per game.
Yep.
But yeah, Travis has these moments where he just says something that I'm just like, oh, that's going to be fun to look back on 5 weeks from now when it's the height of hubris. But, yeah, to be clear, I actually don't have a problem with the Marion Barber game advancing over that. I had a problem with you saying that it's not even close. That was my reason for my impassioned speech.
The only reason...
You talked for, like, 8 minutes.
The only reason I say that is because I think you could apply all of that to another 2021 game in here, but I think that one was worse, personally.
See, for me, I think it's still... I know what you're saying about the Bucs game, and I understand that. For me, it just... The complete and total whiplash from months of buildup and high expectations and it's very similar to the Jay in 2009, just the complete and total whiplash from, like, you were so excited about this for months. And within 10 minutes, you could tell it had all gone
entirely to shit. I agree with you about that. And I don't want to get too into the Jay thing, but the thing about the Jay game is that, like, Jay was coming in as an estate. Like, that was a good quarterback we were excited to have acquired.
That's true.
As Travis said, the excitement about Justin was what could he become? we got what we thought was already a good quarterback in Jay, and it all fell apart over and over and over again. Like, at least there was a reason to have that expectation.
God, is that the most common? Good. Is this the most common Bears feeling? Is to go into something feeling confident and then to just absolutely get destroyed? Like,
buddy, I haven't gone in feeling confident.
Yeah, I don't ever go. You're the only one still capable of confidence. That's a you thing, but it is the Bears thing to go in with, like, the hope. I think so many times I've told myself, like, if they just do this, then I can believe, not just hope, believe. And every time I say that, they do not do this. Whatever the this is, they don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the cornerstone of my sadly lost passionate plea about putting two Jay Cutler Packers games in there, which is that they actually did all those things that we spent 3 years being like, if they just give him wide receivers, if they just get a better offensive line, if they just this, and then it's still the same fucking thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would
also vote for Marion Barber.
Okay.
On the strength of, like, all of the things that Travis said, plus I feel like a game, just, it merits special consideration if it has a moment that is forever, like, everybody remembers that. You don't always remember just watching a shitty game where your team gets beat up. But, like, in my own case, I remembered that Marion Barber should have stayed in bounds before I remembered that he was dead.
Yep. It's true. It's very,
I mean, that true. That also does add an element of tragedy here. Let's not lie.
That's right.
And as I say, it's always Marion been it's always been unfair that that's
how we what, remember.
Like, yeah. I liked having Marion Barber on the Bears. I thought he was a great addition. He was a good compliment to Matt Forte. And it just, the one time he was supposed to do the Marion Barber thing, which is just run right at a guy, hit him as hard as you can, and get as many yards while you're falling down as you can. He went out of bounds for some reason and gave us the entire Tim Tebow magic saga. Like, if you, because when we were reading about this, I was looking for, like, you know, just nuggets about this game to try and refresh my memory. And one of them is Tim Tebow saying, like, yeah, obviously it was great for us that he went out of bounds. I guess it's just magic. I'm Tim Tebow and God was watching out for me. I'm like, oh God, like, you can directly blame it for all that shit that we had to put up with about how, oh, teams don't like him because he kneels after he scores a touch. Ah, they don't want a Christian player on their team. Like, that's all that comes from this.
All right. Marion Barber moves on. Should we put an end to this region now?
That's what I'm wondering. Do we just advance? Okay. Do we do double doink versus Barber, or do we do?
I say we do, since they're fresh in our mind at least.
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of went over them.
I actually don't know that we need a ton of discussion here. I actually would advance Marion Barber over double doink.
This is going to be 3-for-3, I imagine.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
All right. Yeah, the double doink was just, it was too good of a game.
Well, and it was,
frankly, yeah, it was too watchable. Sometimes you lose. Yeah. I don't hold it against the Bears to lose a good close game, you know, against a team that's decent. Like, that's, you know, that happens.
Well, and
I don't
also
expect to win the Super Bowl every year.
And also, as we said from the beginning, playoff games are actually going to have a penalty against them for the most part in this tournament, because the least Bears experience is making the playoffs. So, right.
Yeah, like, it's one of those, I'm just happy to be here, kind of, right. You know.
I think, you know,
the we could have had nothing instead of the double doink.
The 2011 NFC Championship game, when we talk about that, there's a lot more added to that because of the specific psychosis caused by who that game was against. But, like, for the most part, I mean, the double doink, like, it's a game against the Eagles. The Bears and Eagles are not, you know, there's not a rivalry there. I mean, no one can stand Philadelphia fans, but still. Like, that's not a thing. And then again, yeah, it was one fluke play at the end of a competitive game. The Barber game, there are multiple miscues in that same game. It's against a team that you should, and a quarterback you should never have lost to. And it was the signature loss of a collapse that should have easily been avoided simply by having just a regular backup quarterback on the roster. I'm not sure that, I think if the 2011 Bears had Tyson Bagent instead of Caleb Haney,
yeah,
they probably make the playoffs.
We didn't even need competence. We just needed, yeah, I mean, I was, we needed a game manager.
I think, considering how much mileage we got, I think Josh McCown would have won that game.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Without question. Absolutely. Yeah.
Josh McCown would have won by 30.
Josh McCown won the one start that he did make for that team that year.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. All right. So, well, yeah. So sorry Barber to the game sorry, wins. Sorry to the youth. I know you guys. I know the double doink will always haunt all of you. I get it. But yeah, I think for the rubric that we are judging these games on, it has to be Marion Barber over the double doink.
And fear not, Justin Fields. I guess fans, but it feels weird to call you fans in terms of your boy being obliterated. He'll get his in the unwatchable bracket.
Fear not, fans of Justin Fields getting obliterated. He's still in this tournament.
Our first Final Four team is in. Our first Final Four game is in. It is the Tim Tebow Marion Barber game.
Oh, this bracket is going to be exciting. I like the just embarrassing region because it's fun.
You made a big point out of me seeding those. I want to tell you that this one, other than Oops All Puns, which I felt just deserved a one seed solely for Eric's nickname, any one of these, you could have ranked any of these four in any.
Yeah, I mean, they're
order.
All.
They're all deeply
embarrassing.
I have D'Angelo Hall as a two seed over Tressman second down, and I'm honestly not sure. Even as I'm having talking right now, which one of those I'm voting for. So let's start with the top. So number one seed in the just embarrassing region. Oops. All punts. 2015 Bears versus Seahawks. The Bears do not have a single possession that does not end in a punt. Or the four seed, our play-in seed, the 2010 Bears versus Giants Jay Cutler sackpocalypse.
So full disclosure, when we first started making this bracket, it's a little muddier now that we've talked about it all. Oops All Punts was my initial favorite to win the whole
all thing. The way through?
Mm. All the way through. It is, and in at least one regard, it is the worst thing an NFL team has ever done.
It's true.
No one else has ever done that.
Oops All Punts is a strong nominee for me in this region. I don't think it could have ever advanced that far for me, though.
I mean, that's fine. I'm just in this matchup.
It's a John Fox era game. It's 2015. No hopes, no expectations. It's a zero on the heartbreaking factor.
Yes.
It's pretty high on unwatchable, I'll give you that. It's got nothing to do with the Packers, who are our biggest bully and major mental tournament. So it was never a champion contender for me. I'll just say that right now as we discuss it. It's not going to advance that far for me anyways. You know, there are three of us. But yes, in terms of just embarrassing, it's pretty hard to beat literally punted every single possession. And what was, honestly, it was obviously never a winnable game, but they were not being...
They shouldn't have been shut out.
They were not being shellacked ever at any point in this game.
It was at no point was there a time where truly until late in the fourth quarter did it truly make sense to just throw in the towel.
Some of that might have been because the Seahawks
knew they didn't have to try.
Came out swinging, and then they were just like, "All right, if you guys are just going to keep punting, like why would we risk anything at all?"
It took about two possessions in that game for the Seahawks to go, oh, they can't move the ball.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything. That was it. We don't have to worry about it.
Yes. This is a tough one for me.
But then again, we have the Giants. We have nine sacks in one half. Still an NFL record, and this was a Bears team that came in riding high off of three straight wins to start the season. They had just beaten the Packers. Again, as Travis said, one of the few clean Aaron Rodgers wins that they had. We were riding high. It was as good as it could possibly get. And they're just immediately just embarrassed by a Giants defense that, if I remember, wasn't particularly good that year. That was what do we see here?
This is part of those Giants teams where the defense would suddenly turn on with Eli Manning and then just go on a big run. But most of the time,
so they were
just crap.
In terms of total points, that defense was 17th, which is neither good, it's average. They were 7th in total. Okay, so the defense actually was better than I thought they were at the time. But they were coming into that game having just been shellacked 29-10 by a not good Titans team. They had lost 38-14 to the Colts the week before that. So they were 1-2. There were, as tended to happen a lot, there were the annual, like, oh, we should fire Tom Coughlin. Rumors. Now, this was the start of, I think, five straight wins that they then reeled off. But yeah, at the time, their defense was looking pretty terrible. They were a team in disarray. The Bears were 3-0 riding high, and then just got Jay Cutler got absolutely embarrassed. We got our first appearance of Todd Collins, who looked absolutely terrible, and this did nothing to prompt Lovie not to start him the next week against the Panthers, which again was one of the few wins that multiple people nominated for inclusion in this bracket. And again, Rick Tellender wrote, and just as tends to happen during the Jay Cutler era, the Bears media in general decided that the main person who bore the blame for Jay Cutler getting severely concussed had to be Jay Cutler. So there was that, and then the blame of the diabetes. I mean, it's a strong contender.
I want to share a fun little factoid that I found while I was looking at this game. Because I said, it was initially Oops All Punts was my favorite. I'm open here to being convinced because I wanted to see how often it was that a quarterback had been sacked 9 or fewer times in an entire season. Just for comparison's sake.
Okay.
It has only happened twice. In 1988, Dan Marino, I looked for 500 throws or more just to, you know, say like it's not a guy who went out there and played one game and got sacked 2 times. In 1988, Dan Marino was sacked 6 times. In 2003, Joey Harrington was sacked 9 times. Next is Peyton Manning and Dan Marino, both with 10 sack seasons, and the fifth least sacked quarterback to make 500 attempts or more is Jay Cutler, who was sacked 11 times in 2008 in Denver.
Of course, in Denver. That is fucking.
Does that think, not?
So that's if I can. I'm glad Eric brought that up because if I can be really an analytics nerd here for a second. One of the things that's really advanced in the last 10 years in the NFL, and especially in NFL advanced stats, is this understanding that sacks are, to a great extent, a quarterback stat. The number of pressures that you get isn't always under your control, but a lot of times you will find, like a guy like Tom Brady, will largely convert the same number of pressures to sacks year after year. And that's how you can tell which quarterbacks, you know, because we have Justin Fields as the ultimate example, kind of as a guy who will make a good offensive line look bad because of how much he holds the ball and converts pressures to sacks. So when I first started to learn about this a couple of years ago, started to look into it, and, you know, I had my Pro Football Focus subscription, I went back and I was expecting to find much the same when I looked at Jay Cutler. I was expecting to find that Jay Cutler was actually way more responsible for more of his sacks than I thought at the time. And I was wrong. Maybe I was wrong all these years that I blamed the offensive line. But if you go back, Jay Cutler had a perfectly league average pressure to sack rate that entire time. He was not an egregiously bad sack creator. And if you look at him that year in Denver, yes, he only took 11 sacks on over 600 plus freaking dropbacks. Like, that's not that kind of good sack season. You're not capable of that unless you personally actually are kind of good sometimes at avoiding sacks. So when you consider the number of sacks he took during that early Jerry Angelo era part of his career, and I think even when he was under Trestman, he did not take that many sacks. Like, Trestman had a system that would actually, like, help him get the ball out sometimes. So yeah, to look back and realize like, no, Jay Cutler really wasn't the problem. Jerry Angelo just built just the most dog shit offensive lines imaginable. And when I was researching the worst Bears players last year, I remember I brought up the statistic where in Pro Football Focus history, going back to like 2006 or whatever, I could only find like a handful of tackles who had given up at least 11 sacks, who had been personally credited with 11 sacks allowed in an NFL season. Frank Omiel was the only guy I could find, or no, Jamarcus Webb, I think, was the only guy that I could find that had done it twice. And and Frank Omiel actually had, I think, the most sacks allowed of any one tackle in Pro Football Focus, since Pro Football Focus has tracked those since 2006. And they were on the same offensive line at the same time. Those two tackles alone, if you just take out every other sack that was created by Jay, by a back missing a blitz, by the centers, the guards, everyone else. We just take away all of those. Jay Cutler would still have been sacked, I think, 26 times just from those two tackles alone.
Incredible.
Which is just staggering. That is a bad season overall for Patrick Mahomes, is 26 sacks.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think the other underrated thing about this game, we're really piling onto this Giants game, but the other thing is, and you mentioned it very briefly, we got our first taste of Todd Collins, and this was the moment where we all said, the Bears don't have a backup quarterback. We're like, wow, we need a backup quarterback, right? And then, yes, the next week really calcified that belief, but this really started throughout this season, which would end up being a very good season, and it's a season we're going to talk about a lot. We just constantly were like, surely the Bears, they're not just going to continue with Todd Collins as the backup, right? Like there's no way, because they know Jay is going to get hit a lot. He got hit a lot in this game. Surely they're going to get an okay backup quarterback. And they never did. And
more specifically,
that's history, I guess.
More specifically, what I remember is that so in the Todd Collins Panthers game, Todd is just abysmal. One of the worst, I think still statistically, the worst performance by a winning quarterback in NFL history. But he got benched for Caleb Haney in that game, and Caleb did look moderately better. And I remember in the weeks shortly after that game, they said Caleb Haney was the second string quarterback. But then I remember at one point just in December, they just kind of snuck it in at a press conference. Levy was like, oh yeah, Todd Collins is the number two quarterback again.
Yep.
And I remember being like, so not only did you try to upgrade from Todd Collins, did you not try to upgrade from Todd Collins? You benched him and went back to him? Why are we doing this? So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Should be said, we also haven't said it yet out loud, but the 9 sacks in 1 half is an NFL record. It is not tied with anything else. Daniel Jones got sacked 8 times in a game once, but 9 is still the NFL record for a half.
So both of these do have a historic component.
Yes.
Yes. And I do think part of what's in a tournament like this, which is so much about dramatics, I think what's almost working against oops all punts here is how easily reduced it is just to that sentence. And this game had a lot of other factors.
I also want to say in mitigation, this Giants game is coming in with a head of steam because we did not talk about it at all.
It is
previous to this right episode.
You got it.
So I don't want to, you know, right. And again, I'm not saying I'm not open to changing my mind, but all of this discussion is new because we didn't have it before. We did take some time to linger on just how bad
it's true.
Being the only team ever to punt away all of your possessions in a single game is.
Yeah, I mean, it really is remarkable. It should be said that, like, again, this is the only time, and folks, you might be thinking, surely that's not possible. Like, this must have happened, right? Back in the early 1900s, this must have happened. But no, because there's always a point in the game at which a team says, there's no point to me punting. I have to score. And the Bears hit that point twice late in this game, and they just said, yeah, but we don't care, and punted anyway, which is, I mean, it's historic what
it's
they
the
did.
It's the closest you can get to forfeiting a game without literally forfeiting the game.
They actually quit.
They went out there and didn't even play not to lose. They played like this was a court-mandated football game that if they did not appear, you know, they were like on probation, and if you don't play this football game, it's back to prison for you. So they went out there, and it's like a pacifist football game. Like, you could not try less to score points.
We don't want to score. Do you see who our quarterback is? We don't even want him to succeed. Like, what are we all doing out here, guys?
On a 4th and 1 at midfield.
Yeah,
they did.
Teams have like a 70% chance of converting on 4th and 1.
Okay, Travis, you vote. Eric, you vote, and I will literally decide in the moment if you guys disagree.
It's Giants.
It has to be oops all punts for me. It has to be. It is the worst thing they have ever done. And like you say, it feels less bad because what it was very boring. But that very resistance to analysis comes from the fact that, like, there's nothing less you can do and still play football.
Okay. I think I'm gonna
That's a great point.
I think I'm gonna advance oops all punts. And part of that might also be because I think I'm just about to advocate literally right now for another 2010 Bears game, and I want to overrepresent them.
I was actually going to say, like, should we also just not have it all 2010 like bracket?
Okay. Like, it sounds like we're in agreement about the next one. Then
we know who's winning the next one. Yeah. This is going to be quick. Like, we've got 10 minutes. We can talk about it if we want. But
okay, oops, all punts advances, and then okay, so we are all agreed on D'Angelo Hall versus over the Trestman kicking on second down. Absolutely. I don't disagree, obviously, but I would like to open the floor to one of you to explain why you're making that choice.
So, as I said in the episode where we advanced it, throwing four picks to one guy is a pretty bad thing to do. There is not a worse guy for that to be than D'Angelo Hall. Mm. Like, you know, you throw four picks to, like, a Richard Sherman. It's like, well, yeah, damn, man, that's Richard Sherman. He's a good player. You throw four picks to D'Angelo Hall and then try to talk shit about it after the fact? I cannot think of anything more embarrassing to have occurred in this context.
It's so Jay Cutler. This is the most Jay Cutler game. This is the most Jay Cutler Bears game. This is in the middle of a good season for the Bears, guys. This is in the middle of maybe the second best Bears season of our lifetimes. And this is the pinnacle of Jay Cutler going out there in full-on hubris, ripping the ball at D'Angelo Hall four times for four interceptions, including one that turned into a pick six to seal the game. We didn't need to throw the fucking ball. We didn't need to throw it the whole game.
It cannot be stressed enough that this is the one time that if Lovey had just gone full Lovey and been like, look, every single time that we are in field goal range, you will just run the ball. You will not call a single pass attempt. They would if they'd done that, they win that game like 18-6 handily. Like, they did not need and for me, it's even more the Mike Martz factor than just the Jay Cutler factor, because it's the perfect summation of Mike Martz being your offensive coordinator. And then it's important to remember that Mike Martz was only the offensive coordinator because Lovie Smith never liked giving any thought to offense whatsoever. And he hired his old buddy head coach who needed a job because no one else was going to hire him. And they also couldn't get any better candidates because this was entering the 2010 season when everyone thought Lovey was a lame duck who was about to be fired. So no reputable offensive coordinator would take this job. So 1 year into the Jay Cutler era, you had already sabotaged it by being forced to hire a bargain basement offensive coordinator who nonetheless lacked any kind of humility or ability to adapt his precious system to fit the personnel that he had. So just even the Mike Martz factor being part of this game is big for me, because that is such a Bears situation to end up with, because no organization's ever been like, it's one offensive coordinator. How much could he cost? $10? So there's so many things that go into this. And then, yes, picked off four times by one guy, that one guy being D'Angelo Hall, Jay showing absolutely zero reflection, humility, etc., talking about it after the game. You didn't need to throw the ball. This was not a desperate comeback attempt. Like, if you just don't throw any one of these interceptions, you probably just kick a field goal and win the goddamn game.
It's the I'll fucking do it again of this game that puts it way over the top for me. Jay coming out and just being like, absolutely, I would go back out there and
I would have thrown him five
at his fucking face 10 more times. And if he picked it off 10 more times, I'd do it 20 more times.
The Trestman kicking a field goal on second down is a very embarrassing thing to happen. That was kind of the beginning of the end for me on that, like, era of hardcore, like, watching every minute of every game, analyzing after the fact, all of that. Hold on, bud. That was sort of the beginning of the end for me. But the thing is, it was a beginning. It was the harbinger of things to come.
Yeah.
It, in and of itself, was not the worst thing about the Mark Trestman era Chicago Bears. In and of itself, the D'Angelo Hall thing is like, you don't need any context for that to be a truly horrific thing to happen. Jay could have otherwise been a great quarterback. They could have won the Super Bowl that season. That thing happening would still be on this list.
Yeah, the D'Angelo Hall game to me is a very strong contender for this whole thing because A, not a playoff game. B, like absolutely devastating in the middle of the season because you're like, oh, Jay is always going to make these mistakes. And it doesn't matter how good the team is. It's going to pop up again because this is who he is.
And
this
to be clear, a dog shit opponent. That was not a good
You didn't get picked off by a great defense four times. You didn't get outthought. You didn't get
bad defense. Schemed bad around. Player. He could have done this to anybody. Like
that was the 31st ranked overall defense in the NFL in terms of yardage. They got just 14. That defense got 14 interceptions all season long. Four of them were Jay Cutler. Literally 10 other interceptions, there are 10 other interceptions in their other 15 games, which is just staggering. It was not a quality opponent. They entered that game having just lost to the Colts. Like, it was just, ugh, for God's sakes. They followed up that Bears win by losing to the Lions with Sean Hill at quarterback. And then 2 weeks after that, they lost to the Eagles on Monday Night Football to Michael Vick in that game where Michael Vick had like four passing touchdowns, two rushing touchdowns, like 700 total yards, basically all by himself, scored 59 points. This was not a good team, not a good defense. Literally all you had to do was run the goddamn ball.
So it was bad.
Which long time listeners and former readers will know that there is nothing that at least I personally hate more than talking about how the Bears need to run the dang ball. But in this instance, we've never needed you to do that until now. And instead you threw four interceptions to D'Angelo Hall.
Yeah. I don't think this bears too much more discussion. No. We could just move D'Angelo Hall game.
And frankly, I won't flatter myself that I can argue oops all punts over this one.
Yeah.
I do it under duress, but I know that I can't win that fight.
I can find like the win probability chart, like for each of those interceptions, like where they were at, like
what did Jay do by himself in this game to cause us to lose? The problem is on so many of those interceptions, the win probability was still probably in the Bears.
Yeah, I just try to figure out how much each one of them.
Yeah, I mean, until the very end, they could still have. It's like, yeah, I mean, all they need to do is stop throwing interceptions to D'Angelo Hall, and they've got it in the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
all right. So, Kyle, are you okay with it?
I'm just okay with advancing it right to the final four.
Past oops, all punts.
I'm okay with that. Yeah, I think it's really hard to pick the signature J game, and there's a couple contenders on the other side, on the other half of this that we'll get to next time. But like,
yeah,
I think there's two kinds of signature J games. This is the one that was about Jay Cutler, the man.
Right. There's two signature Jay Cutler games, which is Jay fails himself and then the Bears fail Jay. This is not the Bears fail Jay signature game. That was arguably the Giants game, maybe.
Yeah, you're right.
I think there's three contenders for that, honestly. And then the other one is...
This is definitely the Jay fails himself game, so for sure. Yeah, no, I'm fine with... So we've got two entries into the final four then, so it's D'Angelo Hall, and then it's... Okay, so it's D-Hall game versus Marion Barber then in the final four.
Correct.
That's our first final four matchup. Okay, that's half the bracket. That's half the bracket taken care of then. We'll see you guys later when we get together to do the other half.
I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.